Hi, this is Lily Frost with Just World Books, bringing you the fourth podcast in our revived podcast series. If you are interested in learning more about our podcasts, books, events, and news, you can find us at www.justworldbooks.com. Again, that is www.justworldbooks.com. Recently, Dr. William Quant, veteran Middle East analyst and editor of Troubled Triangle, the United States, Turkey, and Israel in the New Middle East, had the opportunity to speak with Dr. Shebnem Gamushku and Dr. Sally Ozel about the latest breakthrough in Turkish-Israeli relations. These discussions followed up on the issues raised in Troubled Triangle concerning the tangle of accusations, fears, and misunderstandings that have arisen among policymakers in Israel, Turkey, and the U.S. These conversations also came just after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu apologized to Turkey for the consequences of the Gaza flotilla incident in May 2010, which took the lives of 8 Turks and 1 Turkish-American on the Mavi Marmara. Dr. Quant provided some context for these issues before discussing the reasons behind this recent rapprochement, as well as the obstacles that this reconciliation might face. And he sends us this report from Istanbul.
I'm Bill Quant, editor of the book entitled Troubled Triangle, a series of essays by Turkish, Israeli, and American scholars examining the relationship among their 3 countries. I convened a conference in spring 2011 at the University of Virginia, and the book is a result of the papers that were presented there. The conference took place 1 year after the so-called Mavi Marmara incident, when Israeli commandos had stopped a Gaza-bound Turkish ship, resulting in the death of 8 Turks and 1 Turkish-American. To the Turks and Turkish public opinion, this was a very strong affront, and the reaction was strong. Prime Minister Erdogan demanded an apology from Israel. He asked for compensation for the families of the victims and a lifting of the siege of Gaza. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu refused. Diplomatic relations were cut, and Turkish-Israeli relations, long an important feature of Middle East politics, took a nosedive, much to the annoyance of the Obama administration. In the book, the authors largely attributed the downturn in relations to several important factors. First, the interests of the 2 countries, as determined by their leaders, had been diverging for some time. Turkey, during the early decade of the new century, felt that it was important to try to work with countries such as Iran. Israel did not. Turkey felt that an Arab-Israeli peace process was a high priority. The Israeli Prime Minister did not share that view. Turkey largely welcomed the so-called Arab Spring. Israel, on the whole, did not. Inevitably, this led to different perceptions of issues in the region and different policies. The second factor that received a great deal of attention at our conference was the domestic politics in each country. Prime Minister Erdogan, elected 3 times, was astutely reading his own public in taking a tough stand in demanding an apology from Israel. In Israel, Prime Minister Netanyahu, and especially his foreign minister, Avigdor Lieberman, believed that their hardline stand also was good politics. Among our authors, there was some divergence of opinion over whether the 2 countries would eventually mend their relations and find some way back to a more cooperative relationship, and also some question over what role the United States would play in any such rapprochement. I'm now in Turkey in late March 2013, just as President Obama has indeed helped to engineer an Israeli apology to the Turkish people and Turkish government, and that apology may, in fact, open the way for some degree of rapprochement between the 2 countries. Indeed, there is a great deal of speculation about that in Turkey as I speak. It is not entirely clear to me what Israel expects to get out of the improved relationship, but it is clear already that the Turkish reaction has been generally very positive, and they feel that their prime minister did well to hold out for an apology and compensation. Not only were the terms met that he had laid out, but he will also presumably benefit from President Obama's thanks for helping the president achieve one of the few successes that occurred during his trip to the Middle East. This, on the whole, has been a very good week for Prime Minister Erdogan, since he also was able in recent days to announce a ceasefire in the long-running conflict with the Kurdish radical group, the PKK. Many Turks see this as a potentially important development for their country, a possible end to a decades-long internal conflict that has cost the country up to 40,000 lives. So Turks with whom I have talked see things moving quite well from their standpoint on the political front and on the economic front. In the next few days, I will be talking to Turkish friends and colleagues about some of these issues, and I hope to post some of what I learn on the Just World Books website. Okay, I'm speaking with Shebnem Gümüşgü at the Sabancı University, and we're going to discuss the very interesting recent development of an apparent breakthrough in the Israeli-Turkish impasse, which was announced during President Obama's visit to the Middle East recently. So I'd like to ask you from the Turkish point of view, why do you think this was a good time, or was it a good time, for the Prime Minister to accept the apology on the terms that he did? Did he make any concessions, or were his terms essentially met?
I think his expectations or conditions from Israel was pretty much met. They were accepted by the Israeli side. Of course, why they were accepted is a different question that we can discuss. But I find the timing pretty important for the Turkish side, because right at the same time that we hear Israel apologizing for the Mavi Marmara incident, we see that there is a very historic negotiation going on in Turkey between the Kurdish side and Abdullah Öcalan particularly and the Turkish government. So right, I think it was a day before this apology came from Israel, there was this celebration, Nehru celebration in Diyarbakir, and millions of Kurds gathered there, and Öcalan's message to the Kurds, particularly the PKK, was read, and he asked for PKK guerrillas to go back to Kurdish...
And to stop fighting.
Yes, exactly. So
this looks like the past week was a rather good one from Turkey's standpoint, at least the possibility of an end to the Kurdish conflict, and essentially Israel finally doing what it refused to do for 3 years in terms of taking some responsibility for the Mavi Marmara incident.
That's right. I mean, when you look at the government, the power of the government right now and the popularity of Prime Minister Erdogan, you see that he has stricken actually two major victories. And the apology coming from Israel is really seen by many people from, you know, left to right as a major political victory on the part of the Turkish side. And as you know, the Arab uprisings have actually challenged the Turkish foreign policy in the region. It kind of created lots of problems for zero problems neighbors, you know, with neighbors doctrine and so forth. And past couple of years was not easy for Turkey to readjust its foreign policy, given the crisis with Israel or, you know, ongoing crisis in Syria. It was not really what Turkish decision makers expected. But with the apology coming from Israel, and once again we see the foreign ministry people building up their, you know, prestige and making up for, you know, some of the troubles that they faced in a couple of years.
Would you be surprised, however, if in the near future strains reappear in the relationship with Israel over something like stalemate in the Arab-Israeli issue or divergent policies on Iran or possibly on Syria?
Well, actually, it depends on how Erdogan, Prime Minister Erdogan, will approach some of the critical issues that may be problematic between Turkey and Israel. Gaza is one of those issues, and if Erdogan pushes really hard in improving the situation in Gaza, then it may again get strained. Syrian crisis or Iran, I don't really see great difficulties on that path. It seems that Turkish and Israeli interests are kind of converging on these two primary issues. Of course, there are some, you know, differences when they look at Syrian opposition and different forces within the Syrian opposition, but I think they're pretty much converging in their positions in Syria and in Iran. Okay. But Gaza would be...
Right, could be a problem.
Yeah, could be a problem.
Okay, great, thank you.
Thank you.
So I'm meeting with my colleague and friend Salih Özel in Istanbul. 2 years ago, we were at a conference at the University of Virginia talking about the Israeli-Turkish-American triangular relationship. And many of our colleagues at the time were
quite skeptical that the relationship between Israel and Turkey could be restored on some reasonable basis. Saleh was one of the participants who thought that in time the interests of the two countries would bring them closer together. And I'm here in Istanbul at a time when that may be underway. So I wanted to ask him what he thinks the importance of the decision by the Israeli Prime Minister to apologize to the Turkish people about the Mavi Marmara incident is, and what the consequences might be for the near future.
Yeah, first of all, I did not really expect it. I expect to see this happen right now. I thought that until 2014, the Turkish Prime Minister really did not have much of an interest in going along with the reconciliation with Israel. On the other hand, it did happen, and I think there are good reasons for it to have happened now. First of all, to remind your listeners that twice before in the past three years, Netanyahu came close to signing the deal, but he did not want to overcome the objections of Lieberman, his foreign minister, and therefore at the last moment reneged on his promise and did not sign it. In fact, after the first one, the Turkish prime minister in June of 2011 added a third condition, the third condition being he made his accepting an Israeli apology also conditional on Israel lifting the embargo on Gaza. Okay.
Which may be hard to get.
Yes, exactly. But the thing is, of course, by now, the embargo on Gaza, which was, by the way, not just Israeli but also Egyptian, has been lifted for all intents and purposes on the Egyptian side, and the Israelis are allowing anything that is not dual use, which means that probably 70% to 80% of the embargo just basically went away, except that the quarantine on the sea just continued. Right. So in his acceptance of the Israeli apology, the prime minister, as is the custom on such things, finagled some of those things in that his third condition was not truly fulfilled, and actually his first condition was not truly fulfilled in the sense that the apology was meant to be, was supposed to come for having attacked Mavi Marmara on international waters, which as far as I'm concerned was illegal. But the Israelis actually ended up apologizing, which was, by the way, for consequences of their operations, which was, of course, the loss of Turkish lives. But whatever it was, I think there were good reasons for the two countries structurally to come to this point of reconciliation, of which I think the most important is Syria and the kinds of threats that Syria can represent if the regime totally disintegrates or comes into the hands of jihadists in Damascus. First of all, let me also remind your listeners that Turkish-Israeli trade after the Mavi Marmara incident nearly doubled. Turkish-Israeli flights between Tel Aviv and Istanbul are now about 18 a week. They're all full, by the way, because Turkey has become a hub and it has not really cut its commercial relations with Israel, and there is plenty of Israeli investment in actually pretty interesting places and industries inside Turkey. Obviously, tourism has dried out, but academic exchanges continue. And whereas in 2010 or 2011, you could not find a Turkish academic who would be willing to go to Israel, there are now uncountable numbers of second-track meetings all around the world about Turkish-Israeli reconciliation before this thing happened. Right. This was being encouraged by the Turkish government, not necessarily because they intended to bring the to fruition, but so that there would be some action. Okay.
Tell me, was there a role that President Obama played in all of this?
President Obama played a very important role. First of all, Hillary Clinton has been extraordinarily adamant in bringing the two countries to a point of reconciliation. She had a very frank discussion with Lieberman, and Lieberman said to her, well, I don't like it, but I will not object to it. But it was Bibi who didn't really do it. So the Americans had a vested interest in bringing Turkey and Israel together. And now the President of the United States himself took the last step. But prior to that, there is a history of about 10 to 12 days of negotiating exactly how this was going to proceed and what the mechanics of it were going to be. And so in a way, the president did the last thing when he asked Bibi to make the phone call, which he knew the Turkish prime minister would accept. And in that sense, the president had a political victory of sorts. And both sides in Israel and in Turkey can also say, well, they've done it their own way and they haven't really given away the house.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
Great.
What a great and timely set of conversations from Dr. Quant about the latest developments in Turkish-Israeli diplomacy, as well as the U.S.'s role in all of this. If you are interested in reading more about the crisis in Turkish-Israeli relations, then please consider purchasing a copy of Troubled Triangle, United States, Turkey, and Israel in the New Middle East, which contains the perspectives and comments of 16 experts from Israel, Turkey, and the U.S. Also, for more information on this book, as well as our other titles, events, and podcasts, please visit our website at www.justworldbooks.com. Thank you, and we hope you join us next time.